I myself tried to step through the invisible barrier and approach. I dropped to the snow like I'd taken a hit straight to the jaw. The soldier had to drag me out to the others.
Did you see my wife?
No, sir, Lynn said. But that hike, it looks brutal. Radians can't get within hundreds of yards of the tower, so this soldier has to march all the way back and forth along the ridges for hours to get where he can send messages.
Dalinar rubbed his chin in thought. Navani's messages seemed trustworthy, and she cautioned patience. But passcodes were not foolproof, and something about this just felt wrong.
What can you see from a distance? Anything?
We had to use spy glasses, Lynn said. There weren't as many people out as usual, but there were some windrunners on the roof, and I think I made out Teft up there, and Issam, the Lightweaver. They held up a big sign with glyphs that we think read Patience and Progress.
Dalinar nodded.
Thank you, Radiant. Go give a full report with details to Brightness Teshev, then get something to eat.
Thank you, sir, she said.
She started toward the exit. Something nagged at Dalinar, however. That weight hadn't completely eased.
Lynn,
he called.
Sir?
The enemy has Lightweavers, or at least something similar.
Yes, sir, she said. Though the only confirmed report we have of them is that incursion at the Thalen Vault a year ago.
He resisted shooting a glance at Zeth, so quiet, so easy to forget, standing nearby, wearing the face of an Alethi man.
Ask Company Lord Sigzel to send another team of scouts later tonight, Dalinar said. I'll infuse the traveling gemstones for another run. Have this new team watch the tower from a distance, hidden, then report anything suspicious they might see.
Wise suggestion, sir, Lynn said,
then bowed and retreated. Jasnah nodded to him, then returned to her exaggerated discussion of the maps. Yes, she was acting a role here. Dalinar glanced at Ruthar, whose face was steadily growing redder. Perhaps he'd had a few drinks too many while waiting for the monarchs to finish their planning, but plainly he did not like how Jasnah was blatantly interjecting herself into the war plans. It was a masculine art, and Ruthar had been forbidden from participating in the planning today. Looking at him, it was hard not to agree with what Jasnah had said about Alethkar. Gavilar's grand unification of the kingdom hadn't lasted 10 years past his death before essentially breaking into civil war. Alethi's squabbling had ended up favoring men like Ruthar. Oily, belligerent, aggressive. The last representation of old Alethkar.
Jasnah was making herself into bait,
and Ruthar bit hard.
Am I the only one seeing this?
Ruthar asked a little too loudly to his attendants.
I didn't say anything when she was made queen. Other nations have queens, but are any of them in this room interrogating a general?
One of his companions tried to calm him, but he brushed her off, shouting,
It's a disgrace! Dalinar writing? He might as well put on a hava and start painting! We deserve the judgments of the Almighty after giving the throne to a godless
He stopped himself just in time, perhaps realizing how still the tent had grown. Dalinar stepped forward to berate the man. There was nothing for it now but to
wit.
Jasnah said, her voice cold. Witt strode forward, his hands spread to the sides, as if stepping out from behind curtains to face an adoring crowd.
I see you're envious of those more skilled in the masculine arts than you, Ruthar, Witt said. I agree. You could use lessons on how to be a man, but those in this room would teach you lessons far too advanced. Let me call in a eunuch to instruct you, and once you've reached his level, we'll talk further.
Harsher,
Jasnah said.
You speak of honor, Ruthar, though you've never known it, Witt said, his voice rising. You'll never find it, though. You see, I hid your honor in a place you could never find it, in the arms of someone who truly loves you.
Witt,
Jasnah said.
Harsher. I've been speaking to your children, Ruthar, Witt said. No, this part isn't a joke. Relis, Ivanar. Yes, I know them. I know a lot of things. Would you like to explain to the Queen where Ivanar's broken arm last month truly came from? Tell me, do you beat your children because you're a sadist or because you're a coward, and they are the only ones who don't dare fight back? Or, oh, silly wit, it's both, isn't it?
How dare you!
Ruthar roared, shoving away the attendant who tried to control him. Anger spren rose around his feet like pools of bubbling blood.
I demand trial by swords. Me versus you, stupid fool. Or me against your champion if you're too much of a coward to face me.
Trial by combat accepted, Wit said lightly, undoing his belt and sliding free his sheathed sword. Shall we?
Fine,
Ruthar said, drawing his sword, causing many of the women and attendants to scatter to the sides of the large tent.
This is idiocy, Dalinar said, stepping between them. Ruthar, you've been baited. Killing a queen's wit is punishable by exile and forfeit of title. You know this.
Ruthar grunted, the words sinking in.
Besides, Dalinar said, glancing over his shoulder, that man is no simple wit. I'm not sure if you can kill him. You tell me I'd forfeit my title, Ruthar growled. What title? What lands do I hold? And exile? We are in exile, Blackthorn. Maybe I should challenge you. You've lost our kingdom, and now you expect me to waste my time in foreign lands, protecting those we should have conquered? We would have, if your nephew had been half the man his father was.
Ruthar, Wit said, you don't need to fight him, or me. I accept your challenge, but I exercise my right to choose a champion. You won't risk losing your lands by killing a wit.
Excellent, Ruthar said. I accept. Stop trying to interfere, Blackthorn.
Dalinar reluctantly stepped to the side. He felt a mounting dread, but there was nothing illegal here, and he doubted any action he could take would prevent this trap from springing.
So, Ruthar said, brandishing his sword, Wit, you call me coward, then wiggle out of a challenge? So be it. Who do you want me to kill, then?
Your Majesty, Wit said, if you don't mind.
He cocked his sheathed sword to the side, hilt out as Yasna brushed past and drew the weapon, a thin, silvery blade that Dalinar didn't think he'd ever seen unsheathed. Dalinar's dread deepened as Yasna stepped into striking range, batting aside Ruthar's sword. He recovered from his shock and blocked her next strike. She was better than Dalinar might have expected, but her stance was uncertain, and she overreached. At best, she was equal to a promising student. She had two distinct advantages, though. She was radiant, and Ruthar was an idiot.
I refuse this, he said, tossing his sword aside. I will not face a woman in combat. It is demeaning.
And so, Yasna stabbed him straight through the throat. This lunge was better than the previous one, but it was not her skill that won the fight. It was the fact that Ruthar underestimated how far she would go. Indeed, Ruthar's eyes bulged as shockspren shattered around him as yellow glass. He stumbled back, gushing lifeblood across his beautiful doublet.
Renarin,
Yasna called. Dalinar's younger son scrambled into the tent from outside, and the full level of her preparation became manifest. The twisting feeling in Dalinar's stomach began to release. He'd been preparing to lock down the tent, send guards for Ruthar's next of kin, and institute martial law. Renarin scurried forward and used his powers as a truth watcher to heal Ruthar, sealing up the wound in the man's neck before he bled out. Still, Dalinar caught the eye of Fisk, the current captain of the Cobalt Guard. He was a solid fellow, bearer of the blade Loremaker. Fisk nodded in understanding and covertly signaled his soldiers to create a perimeter around the tent, nobody in or out, until Dalinar was ready to let news of this incident spread. Yasna held Wit's sword out to her side, and he took it, clicking his tongue.
Not willing to wipe the blood off first brightness? I suppose this is the sword's first kill. Adel Nalsium knows I could never give her that myself. Still,
he wiped the weapon clean with a white handkerchief, glancing at Ruthar.
I'll be billing you for a new handkerchief.
Both Wit and Jasnah pointedly ignored the horrified expressions of the room's attendants. The standout exception was the mink, who was grinning at the show. Dalinar almost expected him to begin applauding. Dalinar felt no such mirth. Although she hadn't gone all the way, he didn't like Jasnah's statement. Duels of passion were, if not common, an accepted part of Alethi culture. He himself had killed more than one man at a feast or other gathering. It was reminiscent, however, of their barbaric days as broken princedoms, times that the Alethi tried to pretend had never happened. These days, this sort of thing was supposed to be handled in a more civilized way, with formal challenges and duels in arenas days later.
Ruthar,
Jasnah said, standing above him,
you have insulted me thrice tonight. First, by implying a queen should not take concern for the welfare of her own armies. Second, by threatening assault to my Wit, a man who is an extension of the royal will. Third, and worst of all, by judging me unfit to defend myself despite my calling as a knight radiant. As you have died tonight, and I have bested you legally in combat, I name you forfeit of your title. It will pass to your eldest son, who has been speaking quite frankly with Wit recently. It seems he will make a far more fitting high prince.
That bastard, Ruthar croaked. A traitorous bastard.
Not yours, then, is he? Wit said. That explains why I like him. What you do from here is your choice, Jasnah said. Unfortunately, by the time you leave this tent, you will find that your princedom has quite thoroughly moved on. You'll be barred entrance to your own camp should you try to return. I suggest you join the military as a new recruit. Alternatively, you may take up the Queen's charity at the beggars' feasts and poorhouses.
She left him gaping on the floor and touching his healed neck, still wet with blood. Renarin awkwardly hurried after Jasnah as she moved over to the map table. Wit dropped his bloody handkerchief before Ruthar.
How remarkable, he said. If you spend your life knocking people down, you eventually find they won't stand up for you. There's poetry in that, don't you think, you storming personification of a cancerous anal discharge?
Dalinar marched up beside Jasnah at the table. Zeth stayed close behind him, carefully watching Ruthar, silent but making certain Dalinar's back was guarded. Renarin stood with his hands in his pockets and refused to meet Dalinar's gaze. The boy likely felt guilty for keeping this little plan quiet, though Dalinar wasn't angry at him. Denying Jasnah was next to impossible in situations like this.
Don't glare at me, uncle, Jasnah said softly. It was a lesson I had to give. Ruthar was a mouthpiece for many other discontented grumblings.
I had assumed, he said, that you of all people would wish to teach your lessons without a sword.
I would much prefer it, she said, but you cannot tame a feral axe-hound with kind words. You use raw meat.
She eyed the still-stunned people in the tent. They were all quite deliberately staying away from Ruthar. Dalinar met Fisk's eyes, then nodded again. The lockdown could be eased. Ruthar's closest allies were fickle, and would see his fallen state as a disease to be avoided. Jasnah had already secured the loyalty of those who could have been dangerous, his family and military advisors.
You should know, Dalinar said, that I found this entire experience distasteful, and not only because you didn't warn me it was going to happen.
That is why I didn't warn you, Jasnah said. Here, this may calm you.
She tapped a paper she'd set onto the map table, which the mink picked up and began reading with great interest. He looked like he hadn't been so entertained in years.
A draft of a new law, the short man said. Forbidding trial by sword.
How unexciting. Yasna plucked the paper from his fingers. I will use my own unfortunate experience today as an example of why this is a terrible tradition. Ruthar's blood will be the last such spilled. And as we leave this era of barbarism, each and every attendant at court will know that Alethkar's first queen is a woman unafraid of doing what needs to be done. Herself. She was firm, so Dalinar tucked away his anger, then turned to leave. A part of him understood her move, and it was likely to be effective. Yet at the same time it displayed that Yasna Kolin, brilliant, determined, was not perfect. There were things about her that unnerved even the callous soldier that lived deep inside him. As he walked away, Renarin hurried over.
Sorry, the boy whispered. I didn't know she hadn't told you.
It's all right, son, Dalinar said. I suspect that without you, she'd have gone through with the plan anyway, then left him to bleed out on the floor. Renarin ducked his head.
Father, I've had an episode.
Dalinar stopped. Anything urgent?
No.
Can I find you later today, maybe tomorrow? Dalinar asked. I want to help contain the fallout from this stunt. Renarin nodded quickly, then slipped out of the tent. Ruthar had stumbled to his feet, holding his neck, his gaudy yellow outfit now ruined. He searched around the room as if for succor, but his former friends and attendants were quietly slipping away, leaving only soldiers and the queen, who stood with her back to him, as if Ruthar were no longer worth attention. Wit stood in his jet-black suit, one hand on the map table, leaning at a nearly impossible angle. Dalinar often found Wit with a grin on his face, but not today. Today the man looked cold, emotionless. His eyes were deep voids, their color invisible in the dim light. They maneuvered Ruthar expertly, Dalinar thought. Forced him to make all the wrong moves. Could I do something similar in facing odium? Anger the god somehow, forcing him to accept a reckless agreement? How did one intimidate a creature as powerful as odium? What on all of Roshar could a god possibly fear or hate so much? He'd have to bring up the matter with Yasna and Wit. Though, not today. Today, he'd had enough of their machinations.
51. To sing hopeless songs. This song, this tone, this rhythm, sounds so familiar, in ways I cannot explain or express. From Rhythm of War, page 5.
Only the femalens among your staff read? Raboniel asked to Craving as they stood in the hallway outside the room with the crystal pillar. I would have thought better of your instruction, Venli, considering how capable you are in other areas. Your staff shouldn't follow foolish human customs. Venli's staff of singers, the ones carefully recruited in Kolinar over the last year, had arrived in Urethiru via the Oathgate transfers early this morning. Raboniel had immediately put them to work. Nearby, the femalens were sorting through the boxes of notes and equipment the human queen had moved out into the hallway. Young human scribes were adding to that, repositioning boxes, making a general scene of chaos. Venli's staff, at Raboniel's order, were doing their best to make sense of it and to read through the pages and pages of notes to try to find important points to bring to Raboniel's attention. They would soon take scholar form to help, but the task was still difficult. Venli had instructed them to do their best. Today, Raboniel stood with her back to the blue shield, watching the confusion in the hallway and humming to herself. Venli hummed to indifference. "Ancient one," she said. "My staff are good.
but they are culturally Alethi. My own people, the listeners, would have happily taught them a better way, but the listeners were taken by Odium in his wisdom.
Do you question Odium, Venli? Raboniel said to Craving.
I have been taught that passion does a person credit, Ancient One, Venli said. And to wonder, to question, is a passion.
Indeed. Yet there are many among the fused who think such passions should be denied to everyone but themselves. You might find Odium shockingly like one of us in this regard. Or perhaps, instead, we are like him. She nodded toward the mess of human scribes and Venli's staff, working in near-perpetual motion like a pile of kremlings feasting after the rain.
What do you think of this? If I had to guess, the human queen seems to be trying to make a mess.
She's creating ways to stall that won't appear like purposeful interference, Raboniel said to ridicule, though she seemed more amused than angry.
She complains that she doesn't have enough space and constantly reshuffles these boxes to buy time. Also, I suspect she's trying to establish a presence outside the room, even if just in this hallway, so that she has a better chance of putting her people where they can overhear what we're saying. She seems to be getting more information than I expected. Some of her people might be able to speak my language.
I find that difficult to believe, Lady of Wishes. From what I've been led to understand, it wasn't but a year ago that they finally figured out how to read the Dawn Chant.
Yes. Curious, Raboniel said, smiling and speaking to Craving. Tell me, Venli, why is it you serve so eagerly after knowing what Odium did to your people?
Timber pulsed in worry, but Venli had already prepared an answer.
I knew that only the very best among us would earn his favor and reward. Most were simply not worthy.
Raboniel hummed softly, then nodded. She returned to her own work, studying the shield around the pillar.
I'm waiting on reports of the pursuer's sweep of the upper floors of the first tier, as well as news of his search for radiance.
I will go immediately and ask, Ancient One, Venli said, stepping away.
Venli, Raboniel said. Many mortals in the past sought elevation to stand among the fused. You should know that after our initial elevation, he never again granted such a lofty gift to a mortal.
I thank you, Ancient One. She hummed to tribute and withdrew, picking her way through the increasingly cluttered hallway. Within her, Timber pulsed to amusement. She knew that Venli had no aspirations of becoming a fused.
Do not be so quick to laud me, Venli whispered to the Spren. The person I was not so long ago would have been thrilled by the possibility of becoming immortal.
Timber's pulses seemed skeptical, but she hadn't known Venli during that time, and as well she hadn't. As Venli reached the end of the hallway, she was joined by Dul, the tall storm setter who was in Venli's inner group of singers, the ones she'd been promising over the last year that she would help escape the fused. Today, Dul wore mediation form, with an open face and smooth, beautiful carapace. He had a mostly red skin pattern, with tiny hints of black, like submerged rocks in a deep red sea. He fell into stride with Venli as they walked out into the chamber with the stairs. As far as she knew, this large open room, in the shape of a cylinder, was the sole way up from the basement. They marched up the stairs that wound around the outside, passing over a section of hastily rebuilt steps, until they were far enough from others that no one would be able to overhear them.
She quickly checked Shadesmar. That place was strange, with glowing lights suffusing everything. But best she could tell, no Voidspren were watching them. Here, isolated on the steps, she felt reasonably safe chatting. "Report," she whispered.
"As you hoped," he replied as they walked. "We have been able to arrange the supply dumps from Kolinar to our benefit. Oliva and Ron are covertly making packs of supplies that will be easy to grab and take if we need them."
"Excellent," Venli said.
"I don't know how we'll escape without being spotted," Dol said. "Everyone is on edge in this place, and they have guards watching carefully outside for Alethi scouts."
"Something is going to happen, Dol," Venli said to determination. "The humans will try to revolt, or an attack will come, or perhaps that captive queen will find a way to turn Fabrials against the Fused. When that happens, whatever it is, we're going to be ready to run. I was led here through the mountains, and I memorized the route. We can sneak through those valleys, hiding from the heavenly ones in the tree cover. There has to be some out-of-the-way location up here in these wilds where a few dozen people can lose themselves to the world." Dol paused on the steps and hummed to Hope. He nearly seemed to have tears in his eyes. "Are you all right?" Venli asked, stopping beside him. He hummed a little louder.
"After all this time, I can taste it, Venli. An escape. A way out."
"Be careful," she said. "We will need some kind of ploy to convince everyone we died, so they don't search for us. And we have to be very careful not to draw suspicion before that."
"Understood," he said, then hummed to tension. "We've had a problem with Schumann, the new recruit."
She hummed to reprimand.
"She tried recruiting others," Dol explained. "She's been implying she knows someone planning to start a rebellion against the Fused."
Venli hummed to derision. She didn't normally use Odium's rhythms with her friends, but it fit the situation too well. Dol sighed like a human.
"It's the same old problem, Venli. The people willing to listen to us are going to be a little unreliable. If they were fully capable or smart, they wouldn't dare keep secrets from the Fused."
"So what does that say about you and me?" Venli asked.
"Pretty sure that was clearly implied," Dol said with a grin, speaking to amusement.
"Isolate, Schumann," Venli said. "We don't dare return her to Kolinar without supervision. But see if you can get her assigned to some kind of menial task without much time to interact with others. And emphasize to her again that she's not to recruit."
"Understood,"
he said softly to consolation. He glanced upward, along the wide set of winding steps.
"I hear the humans almost won here on these steps. No radiance, and they stood against Fused and Regals."
"Briefly," Venli said. "But, yes, it was a sight. I almost wanted them to win."
"Is there a path for us there, Venli?" he asked a pleading. "Go to them, help them, and get help in return?"
"You know far more about humans than I do," Venli said. "What do your instincts say?" He glanced away.
"They don't see us as people. Before, they wouldn't let me and Mazish marry. One of the only times I spoke to my master was to make that request. A single word, with as much passion as I could muster. He was angry that I dared talk to him. One storming word!"
He attracted an anger spren that prowled up the steps below him, like sparking lightning. Timber pulsed morosely. Her kind had been treated similarly, yet Venli found herself thinking about the fight on these steps. They were valiant, these humans, though you obviously had to be careful not to let them get too much power over you. When you get back to the others, Venli said, continuing to climb, put a few of our people on the crews that are gathering and caring for the unconscious Knights Radiant. We should watch them for an opportunity, just in case. She had originally hoped they would be able to train her in her powers, but that seemed impossible now. She still didn't know if she'd be able to use them here without being detected, and was trying to think of a way to find the answer to that.
Understood, Brightness.
He nodded to her as they reached the top of the steps, then parted ways. Venli hummed to Longing. She hoped she wasn't causing Dul to sing hopeless songs. Though she spoke to confidence, she didn't know whether there would be a chance for them to escape in the coming weeks, and the more time she spent with Raboniel, the more she worried. That fused saw things she shouldn't be able to, piercing plots with keen eyes. Each day Venli's people lived in secret was another chance for them to be exposed, taken quietly in the night, and either executed or forced to become hosts for the fused. They needed what she'd promised, to live on their own, as their own nation. Could she really provide that, though? Venli, who had never touched anything in her life without making a storm of it. She had gotten one people destroyed already. Timber pulsed consoling ideas as Venli made her way through the corridors. I wish I could believe, Timber, she said softly. I really wish I could. But you don't know what you're working within me. You don't understand. Timber pulsed, inquisitive. She wanted to know. Venli had long remained silent about the more difficult parts of her past. The time to share them, however, was long overdue. The worst of it began, Venli whispered, when the humans visited us the second time. 52. A Path Towards Saving. 8.5 years ago. A delicate touch, Jack Slim said, to... Venli froze. She looked up from her place by the wall, where she was using some paper, a gift from the humans, to play with letters and beats, representations of sounds in a possible written language, like the humans used. Her mother stood by the window, doing her daily recitations, the same calming songs performed by the same beautiful voice that had been Venli's guide all her days, the foundation upon which she'd built her life. A delicate touch, Jack Slim began again, but again she faltered. Nimble form has a delicate touch, Venli prompted. Gave the gods this form to many. But her mother didn't continue singing. She stared out the window, silent, not even humming. It was the second time this week she'd completely forgotten a stanza. Venli rose, setting aside her work and taking her mother's hand. She attuned praise, but didn't know what to say. I'm merely tired, Jack Slim said. From the stress of these strange days and their stranger visitors. The humans had promised to return, and since their departure months ago, the family had been abuzz with different ideas of what to do about the strange creatures. Go, Jack Slim said. Find your sister. She said she'd come listen to a recitation and at least learn the Song of Listing. I will get some sleep. That's what I need. Venli helped her mother to the bed. Jack Slim had always seemed so strong, and indeed her body was fit and powerful, yet she wobbled as she lay down, shaken, not on the outside, but deep within. Until recently, Jack Slim had never forgotten songs. To even suggest it would have been unthinkable. Once her mother was situated, Venli attuned determination and stepped out of their home, not into a forest clearing, but into a city. One of the 10 ancient ones, surrounded by a broken wall and populated by the remnants of buildings. Finding the humans had emboldened Venli's family. Bearing newly bestowed weapons, they'd marched to the shattered plains and claimed a place among the 10, defeating the family who had held it before them. Once, Venli would have walked tall and proud at that victory. Today she was too unsettled. She went searching, ignoring cries to joy in greeting. Where was Eshonai? Surely she hadn't gone off again, not without telling her sibling and mother. Fortunately, Venli found her at a scouting tower, built up along the broken wall near the front gates of the city. Eshonai stood on the very top, watching out to the northwest, the direction the humans had come from. "Venli," she said, grabbing her arm and pulling her to the front of the flimsy wooden scout tower. "Look, that seems like smoke in the distance. From their campfires, perhaps?" Venli looked down at the wobbly tower. Was this safe? "I've been thinking about what we can learn from them," Eshonai said to excitement. "Oh, it will feel so good to show them to the rest of the families. That will stop everyone from doubting our word, won't it? Seeing the humans themselves." "That will feel good," Venli admitted. She knelt, holding to the wooden floor, while Eshonai stood up on her toes. Storms, it looked like she was about to climb onto the railing. "What must their cities be like?" Eshonai said. "I think I will leave with them this time. Travel the world. See it all." "Eshonai, no," Venli said, and the true panic in her rhythm made Eshonai finally pause. "Sister?" she asked. Venli searched for the right words, to talk to Eshonai about their mother, about what seemed to be happening. But she couldn't confront it. It was as if by voicing her fears, she'd make them real. She wanted to pretend it was nothing, as long as she could. "You were supposed to come today," Venli said, "and listen to one of the songs. Maybe learn one again." "We have you and mother for that," Eshonai said, looking toward the horizon. "I haven't the mind for it." "But I need you with me," Venli thought. "With us, together. I need my sister." "I'm going to lead a scout group to go investigate that smoke," Eshonai said, moving toward the ladder. "Tell mother for me, will you?" She was gone before Venli could say anything. A day later, Eshonai came back triumphant. The humans had indeed returned. It didn't take long for Venli to find the humans tedious. Though they'd barely noticed her on the first visit, this time they wouldn't leave her alone. They wanted to hear the songs over and over. It was so frustrating. They couldn't replicate the songs if they did memorize them. They couldn't hear the rhythms. Worse, when she performed, the humans kept interrupting and asking for more information, more explanations, more accurate translations. Infuriating, she thought, attuned to irritation. She'd started to learn their language because Jack Slim insisted, but it didn't seem a good use of her time or her talents. The humans should learn her language. When they finally let her go for the day, she stepped out of the building and welcomed the sunlight. Sitting outside were three of those dull-minded, stupid parshmen who didn't have songs. Seeing them made Venli uncomfortable. Was that what the humans thought she was like? Some simpleton? Some of her family tried to talk to the parshmen, but Venli stayed away. She didn't like how they made her feel. They weren't her people, any more than the humans were. She scanned the bustling city, noting the crowds of listeners nearby. The humans drew so many gawkers, listeners from many families, even lowly ones who didn't have a city, came to catch a glimpse. lines of people of all varieties of skin patterns stuffed the streets, meaning that Venli was crowded as she pushed through them. "They probably won't come out for a while yet," she said to reprimand, to a group of listeners she didn't recognize. "You are the apprentice keeper of songs," one of them said, "of the family who discovered the humans." He said it to awe, which made Venli pause. So he knew of her, did he? "I am no apprentice," she said. "I am simply waiting, as is respectful, upon my mother's word before I take my place." She glanced back toward the building she'd left. Like many in the city, it was made of ancient walls covered in creme, with a roof of carapace. The humans had been allowed to make camp here, inside the walls, with their tents and their strange wooden vehicles that could withstand a storm. It seemed unfair that their moving structures should last better than the buildings the listeners built. "I've spent many hours with them so far," Venli said to consideration. "What would you know of them? I can tell you." "Do they really lack souls?" asked a female in mate form. Silly things. Venli intended to never adopt that form. "That's one theory," Venli said. "They can't hear the rhythms, and they seem dull of speech and mind. Makes me wonder why they were so difficult for our ancestors to fight."
"They work metal, as if it were wax," another said. "Look at that armor."
"Far less practical than carapace would be," Venli said.
"We don't have carapace armor anymore," another said.
That was true, of course. Their current forms didn't have much carapace. Most of what they knew about grander forms such as warform came from the songs, and Venli infuriatingly hadn't made progress in discovering that one. Still, wouldn't growing your own armor be much better than what the humans did? Well, she answered a few more questions, though she wished for the listeners to notice how tired she was from reciting songs all day. Couldn't they at least have fetched her something to drink? Eventually she moved on and tried to push through her bad mood. She should probably enjoy reciting songs for the humans. She did enjoy the music, but she didn't miss that Jaxlim always had them come to Venli. Her mother didn't want to be seen making a mistake by anyone, particularly not these humans. Deep down, that was probably the real source of Venli's irritation, the knot of worry that festered in her gut, making her feel helpless and alone. Nearby, on the street, listeners changed their rhythms. Venli suspected what it was before she turned and saw Eshonai striding down the street. Everyone knew her, of course, the one who had discovered the humans. Venli almost went to her. But why? There was never any comfort to be found in her presence, only more talk of the human world, their cities and their mystery, and no talk of the real problems at home Eshonai continued to ignore. So instead, Venli slipped between two small buildings and emerged onto a street on the other side. Maybe she could go to the fields and see Demid. She started that way, then stopped. No, they had decided not to show the humans how they used stormlight to grow plants. The songs cautioned that this secret should not be shared, so they weren't working the fields, and Demid wouldn't be there. Instead, Venli made her way down to the plateaus, where she could be alone, just her and the Lifespren. She attuned peace to check the time, then settled down and stared over the broken plateaus, trying to soothe her worry about her mother. Worry that she would have to take over being keeper of songs, as she'd claimed she was to those listeners, a boast that now seemed far too puffed up. Venli didn't want to replace Jaxlim. She wanted to go back to the way things had been before the humans arrived. The moment she thought that, she saw a human female leave the city above and come walking in her direction. Venli sighed. Couldn't they leave her for one movement? Well, they all assumed she couldn't speak their language and so she could play dumb. And it wouldn't require much pretending. Their rhythmless, dead language was hard to understand. The female gestured for permission, then sat next to Venli. She was the one with the rings on her exposed hand. Some kind of surgeon, Venli had been told. She didn't seem important. Most everyone ignored her. She was basically one of the servants. "It's quite impressive, isn't it?" the human said. "In the listener tongue," looking over the shattered plains. "Something terrible must have happened here. Doesn't seem like those plateaus could have formed naturally." Venli attuned anxiety. The woman spoke the words without a rhythm, yes, but they were perfectly understandable. "How?" Venli said, then hummed to betrayal. "Oh, I've always been good with languages," the female said. "My name is Axindweth. Though few here know me by that name, I give it to you."
"Why?"
"Because I think we're going to be friends, Venli," she said. "I've been sent to search out someone like you. Someone who remembers what your people used to be. Someone who wants to restore the glory that you've lost."
"We are glorious," Venli said,
attuning irritation and standing.
"Glorious?" Axindweth said. "Living in Krem huts? Making stone tools? Because you've forgotten how to forge metal? Living all your lives in two forms when you used to have dozens?"
"What do you know about any of this?" Venli said, turning to leave. Her mother would be very interested to hear one of the humans had been hiding the ability to speak their language.
"I know much about too many things," the woman said. "Would you like to learn how to obtain a form of power, Venli?"
Venli looked back.
"We abandoned those. They are dangerous. They let the old gods control our ancestors."
"Isn't it odd?" Axindweth said. "How much stock you put in what your ancestors said. A dusty old group of people that you've never met. If you gathered a collection of listeners from the other families, would you let them decide your future? That's all they were. Your ancient ancestors. A random group of people."
"Not random," Venli said to praise. "They had strength. They left their gods to find freedom."
"Yes," Axindweth said. "I suppose they did." Venli continued on her way. "Stupid human.
There were forms of power that could heal someone, you know," the human said idly.
Venli froze in place. Then she spun, attuning betrayal again. How did she know about Venli's mother?
"Yes," Axindweth said, toying with one of her rings, staring out away from Venli. "Great things were once possible for your people. Your ancestors, the ones you revere, might have been brave. But have you ever asked yourself about the things they didn't leave you in songs? Have you seen the holes in their stories? You bear the pain of their actions, living without forms for generations. Exiled. Shouldn't you have the choices they did, weighing forms of power against your current life?" "How do you know all these things?" Venli demanded, walking back. "How do you know about forms of power? Who are you?"
The woman removed something from within her covered sleeve. A single glowing gemstone, blood red.
"Take that into a storm," the woman said, "and break it. Inside you will find a path towards saving those you love."
The woman stood and left the gem sitting on the rock. Shallan's sketchbook. Reachers.
Reach skin appears to be made of polished bronze metal, but moves as smoothly as flesh. The faint grooves that trace their surface are unique to each individual. Their pupils dilate, despite appearing to be holes poked in bronze orbs. They have no eyelashes. When they have eyebrows, they are shaped of the same bronze substance as their skin. Most Reachers maintain a form that closely matches human physiognomy, but on occasion there are unique variations. The muscularity of their tone does not appear to correlate directly with their relative strength. They do not require exercise or nutrition. Their clothing choices are quite eclectic, from Azish wraps and patterns to Thalen sailor garb. There seems to be no cohesive style to what they wear. They appear in the physical realm as a small ball of white fire that pulses, emitting little rings of light in bursts. When they move, they leave behind a glowing trail like that of a camel. 53. Compassion. I am led to wonder from experiences such as this, if we have been wrong. We call humans alien to Roshar, yet they have lived here for thousands of years now. Perhaps it is time to acknowledge there are no aliens or interlopers, only cousins. From Rhythm of War, page 5, undertext. Timber was uncharacteristically silent as Venli finished her account. Venli had taken the long way up to the 6th floor to gather reports for Raboniel, and had spent the time explaining about that day. The day she'd made her first choice down this path. The day she'd taken that gemstone and hidden it from her mother and her sister. Venli could tell herself all she wanted that her motives had been noble. She knew the truth. She'd kept that secret because she'd been afraid of losing the glory of discovering a new form to her sister. Instead, the reverse had happened. Venli lived her sister's destiny. Venli had ended up with Timber. Venli had become radiant. Venli had lived. These were proof that the Cosmere made mistakes. Venli entered the refreshingly cool 6th-floor balcony room where scouting operations had been set up. Raboniel thought the humans had deliberately destroyed maps of the tower, so this group was making their own. Ruling this place was going to be a huge chore, one Venli was glad she didn't have to organize. The singers here hummed to praise as Venli entered, showing her respect. Even the 2 relay form regals gave deference to a voice such as Venli. She asked for and was given a wide range of reports on the activities up here. Everything from the 7th floor up was unoccupied. Consequently, they were setting up checkpoints at each stairwell on the 6th floor, worried that panicked humans might try to hide on the many upper floors once confinement to quarters was relaxed. And confinement to quarters would need to be relaxed soon. The humans were running out of food and water. Venli suspected Raboniel would give the word for normal operations to recommence by the end of the day. They'd found a large number of unconscious radiants, many of whom had been in the homes of people trying to protect or hide them. Venli hummed to derision as she scanned the list. The foolish people were lucky. Raboniel was more lenient than some fused. She had ordered that anyone found keeping radiants would be punished, and the radiants executed, but that any radiants revealed willingly would be spared. It had been a wise move. Many radiants had been offered up after her announcement. The few found later had been executed, along with one member of each family hiding them. A stern but just application of the law. Timber found it horrifying. Venli found it amazing Raboniel hadn't executed them all. She wants these radiants for something, she thought. something to do with her plans, her experiments. Venli had not forgotten what had earned the Lady of Wishes her terrible reputation. An attempt long ago to create a disease that would end the war by exterminating all of humankind. Well, Venli might have her own use for these radiants. She listened with half an ear to the reports until the relay form said something that drew her full attention. "Wait," Venli said. "Repeat that."
"A human surgeon killed one of our number during the investigations the other night," the Malin said.
"I haven't heard of this," Venli said.
"We reported it at the time, and a fused took charge immediately, so we assumed it had gotten back to Raboniel. This human took an unconscious windrunner with him when he fled."
"Which fused did you report this to?"
"The pursuer."
Timber pulsed worryingly. "Do we have a description of this human surgeon?" Venli asked.
"Tall male," the regal said. "Shoulder length, wavy hair, slave brands. The soldier who witnessed the event claimed the human was glowing with stormlight, but we suspect our soldier was merely rattled. He proved to be a coward and has been assigned to waste detail."
Venli hummed to thoughtfulness, though she felt a mounting dread. Kaladin Stormblessed was in the tower. He hadn't gone with the main bulk of his kind to the war in Emul. And he was somehow still conscious? Leshwe would want to know that. She had asked Venli to watch over Raboniel specifically, but surely this was a matter deserving of her true master's attention.
"I see," Venli said to thoughtfulness. "Has this human been found?"
"He fled to the upper floors," the regal explained to spite. "We searched and found nothing. Even the pursuer, who was certain the human was close, was unable to locate him."
"The Lady of Wishes will find this interesting," Venli said. "Send me word if anything more is discovered."
The regal hummed to command an acknowledgement, then gave Venli a list with descriptions of all the other radiants surrendered to this group. Raboniel wanted them kept all in one room, being watched. Venli would have to put her people to work, looking for a suitable location.
"One conscious windrunner, when all the others remained unconscious."
Yes, she'd find a way to send a note about this to Leshwe.
"The singer who saw the human kill our soldier," Venli said, moving to leave. "Give me his name and station. The Lady of Wishes may want me to interrogate him."
The regal hummed to derision.
"The coward won't be able to tell you much. If the Lady of Wishes is truly interested in this murderous human, she should wait until this evening for another report."
"Why?"
"By then the pursuer will have interrogated the human's family," the regal said, "and will have exacted revenge for the death of our soldier."
The rhythms went silent. Timber, hidden deep within Venli's gem heart, seemed to be holding her breath.
"We captured them, then," Venli said.
"They're locked in the clinic a short way from here," the regal said to Craving. "A surgeon, his wife, one child. We only now discovered they are the murderous human's family. It's a pity the Lady of Wishes has ordered us to be so tame during this occupation, but at least we'll get a little blood tonight."
Venli tried to hum to conceit as she left, but found nothing. No rhythms at all. It was unnerving. She shoved the list of descriptions in her pocket, and as soon as she was a short way from the scout post, she hissed,
"What are you doing?"
Timber pulsed, and the rhythms slowly returned. Venli relaxed. For a moment she'd worried something was wrong. Timber pulsed morosely. To her,
Something was wrong. I agree that it's unfortunate about the Windrunner's family, Venli said. But at the same time, their son was involved in killing one of our troops. Timber pulsed again. I suppose they aren't our troops, Venli agreed. But why do you care so much? Don't you hate humans? That drew a sharp rebuke. Just because Timber and the other Reachers had decided not to bond humans any longer, it didn't mean she hated them. And killing someone's family because they resisted? That was terrible. Many Fused wouldn't take that step. But the Pursuer and his troops? Well, she'd heard the bloodthirst in that relay form's rhythms. Venli walked in silence, troubled. She had her own business to see to, her own problems. Yet Timber continued to pulse softly, urging her. Venli had seen the Blackthorn once in a vision. The bondsmith. He'd shown her kindness. And so many of the humans of this tower, they were just people trying to live their lives. Esher and I would have done something. I'm a fraud, Timber, Venli whispered. A fake radiant. I don't know what I'm doing. Timber pulsed. The meaning was clear. I do. It was enough. Venli turned and started down the steps, picking up speed as she went. There wasn't much Venli could do directly to help the family. Her authority as a voice certainly wouldn't extend to countering the will of the Pursuer. Instead, she made her way to the majestic atrium of the tower. This enormous opening far within the tower reminded her of the shaft that led to the basement. A circular breach in the stone. Only this was on a far grander scale, over 100 feet wide. It stretched tall, high into the darkness above, and seemed to reach all the way to the very top. Lifts ran up and down the inside of the atrium, though they needed void light to work now. The far wall, pointed directly east, was not stone, but instead a flat glass window. Amazingly large, it showed snow-covered peaks and provided natural light to the entire atrium. The lifts were barely in use, as the singers were focused on establishing control of the lower floors. To avoid alerting human Windrunner scouts, the Shanae'im were forbidden from soaring around outside. They'd taken up residence here instead, within this grand hall, hovering in the open air. Venli used her authority to commandeer a lift, then made her way up to the 15th floor. Here she found Leshwe meditating with her long clothing drifting beneath her, with only 2 servants to see to her needs. She donated the others to Raboniel. Leshwe noticed Venli immediately, cracking an eye. Venli sent the 2 servants away and hummed to Craving, standing patiently and waiting for her mistress to formally acknowledge her. Leshwe drifted over to the balcony and rested 1 hand on the railing. Venli approached quickly, humming to tribute.
Why have you not approached in secret? As I explained, Leshwe demanded.
Leshwe had set up a method for Venli to clandestinely deliver notes about Raboniel. Venli found the whole thing a baffling part of Fused politics. Raboniel knew that Venli was spying, and Leshwe knew that Raboniel knew, yet they both pretended the subterfuge was unknown.
The Windrunner you wish to defeat is here in the tower, Venli said, and I have reason to believe he did not fall unconscious. In fact, he still has access to his powers.
Leshwe hummed abruptly to exultation. A telling choice.
Where? Leshwe said. He killed a soldier who was trying to collect the unconscious radiant, Venli said, then escaped into the tower. He rescued 1 other Windrunner.
Honor propels him, Leshwe said.
Even now, even after his god's death.
This is excellent news, Venli. You did well to break protocol to bring me this. Does the pursuer know?
Yes, unfortunately.
Raboniel will let him ignore my prior claim,
Leshwe said.
He won't even be reprimanded for it, so long as it is in service of hunting a fugitive. Poor Stormblessed. He has given them the spear by which to impale him. If I wish to fight him myself, I will need to locate him first.
And do you wish to fight him, Ancient One? Venli asked. Is that truly why you want to find him? To kill him?
Why would you ask this?
Leshwe asked a craving. Venli would have let it die at that, feeling foolish, but Timber pulsed, nudging her.
You seem to respect him, Venli said.
Leshwe hummed softly, but Venli did not catch the rhythm. Odd. Her powers normally let her understand anything her mistress said or implied. There was something familiar about that rhythm, though.
It is rare to find a human who can fight in the skies well enough to be a challenge for me, Leshwe said. And his spren. I hear she is ancient. But never mind that. You will not raise this matter with me again.
Timber pulsed, indicating Venli should tell her mistress. About them. About being radiant.
Stupidity.
Venli immediately shied back at the idea. Leshwe would kill her.
Is there something else? Leshwe said to command.
Stormblessed's family is being held by the pursuer's guards, Venli said. They are on the sixth floor, in a clinic at the perimeter, near the main corridor. The pursuer plans to interrogate them, and I fear it will turn ugly. Many of his troops are angry they were forbidden to kill during the incursion. They are excitable.
Violent and bloodthirsty, you mean?
Yes, Ancient One. The family of the Windrunner would be an excellent resource for us, Mistress. If you wish to find him before the pursuer, then perhaps holding them would give us an advantage.
Leshwe hummed to thoughtfulness. You are merciful, Venli. Do not reveal this passion to others. Wait here.
Leshwe pushed off and soared downward, doing a loop and turning gracefully into the lit central corridor on the sixth floor. Venli waited, Timber pulsing in concern. It took a good hour for Leshwe to finally return, soaring upward from the direction of the large market on the ground floor.
What did you do? Venli asked. I took the Windrunner's family into my custody, Leshwe said. My position gives me authority over the pursuer.
You didn't hurt them, did you? Venli asked, to pleading. Leshwe stared at her, and only after a moment did Venli realize she'd slipped and used one of the old rhythms. Pleading was one of Roshar's rhythms, not Odium's.
I did not, Leshwe said. And now that I've moved and extended myself in this way, the pursuer won't dare harm them. At least not unless the power dynamic shifts in the tower. I placed the family in a safe location and told them to remain hidden. We might need them, as you indicated.
Venli hummed to subservience.
Find a place where we can watch them, then send me a note. I will consider if there is a way to use them to find Stormblessed. And for now, we'll spread a rumor that I have disposed of them. Even if the pursuer finds the truth, though, they should be safe for the time being. That said, I give warning again. You must not let others see your compassion for humans. It will be misconstrued, particularly with you being the child of traitors. Yes, Ancient One, go, she said. I consider what I have done here today a favor to you. Do not forget it.
Venli hummed to subservience and left quickly. Timber pulsed encouragingly.
I am a false radiant, Venli said. You know this.
Timber pulsed again.
Perhaps.
But today had been a step in the right direction.
54. The future become dust. It would have been so easy if void light and storm light destroyed one another. Such a simple answer. From Rhythm of War, page 6.
Grandpa, little Gavinor asked, was my daddy brave when he died?
Dalinar settled down on the floor of the small room, setting aside the wooden sword he'd been using to play at a great shell hunt. Had Adolin ever been this small? He was determined not to miss so much of Gav's life as he had his son's. He wanted to love and cherish this solemn child with dark hair and pure yellow eyes. He was very brave, Dalinar said, waving for the child to come sit in his lap. So very brave. He went almost alone to our home to try to save it.
To save me, Gav said softly. He died because of me.
No, Dalinar said. He died because of evil people.
Evil people? Like Mommy?
Storms, this poor child. Your mother, Dalinar said, was also brave. She didn't do those terrible things. It was the enemy who had taken over her mind. Do you understand? Your mother loved you. Gav nodded, serious beyond his years. He did like playing at great shell hunts, though he didn't laugh during them like other children would. He treated even play as a somber occasion. Dalinar tried to restart the pretend hunt, but the boy's mind seemed overshadowed by these dark thoughts. After just another few minutes, Gav complained that he was tired. So Dalinar let his nursemaid take him to rest. Then Dalinar lingered at the doorway, watching her tuck him into bed. What 5-year-old wanted to go to bed? Though Dalinar had not been the most dutiful parent, he did remember lengthy complaints from both Adolin and Renarin on evenings like this, when they insisted they were old enough to stay up and they did not feel tired. Gav, instead, clutched his little wooden sword, which he kept with him at all times, and drifted off. Dalinar left the small home, nodding to the guards outside. The Azish thought it strange that the Alethi officers brought families to war, but how else were children to learn proper military protocol? It was the evening following Jasnah's stunt with Ruthar, and Dalinar had spent most of the day, before visiting Gav, speaking via Spanreed to High Lords and High Ladies, smoothing over their concerns about the near execution. He'd made certain the legality of Jasnah's actions would not be questioned, and he'd personally talked to Relis, Ruthar's son. The young man had lost a bout to Adolin back in the war camps, and Dalinar had worried about his motivations now. However, it seemed that Relis was eager to prove he could be a loyalist. Dalinar had made certain that his father was taken to Azamir and given a small house there where he could be watched. Regardless of what Jasnah said, Dalinar wouldn't have a former high prince begging for scraps. Finally, after smoothing things over with the Azish, who did not appreciate Alethi trials by sword, he was feeling he had the situation under control. He stopped in the middle of the camp, thoughtful. He'd almost forgotten Renarin's talk of his episode the day before. Dalinar turned and strode through the war camp, a bustling illustration of organized chaos. Messengers ran this way and that, mostly wearing the patterned livery of the various Azish scribe orders. Alethi captains had their soldiers hauling supplies or marking the stone ground with painted lines to indicate directions. A trail of wagons snaked in from the northwest, a lifeline to populated lands and fertile hills untouched by war. Fearing that this camp was already a big target, Dalinar had posted many of his soulcasters in Azamir. The landscape was different from what he knew. More trees, less grass, and strange fields of shrubs with interlocking branches that created vast snarls. Despite that, the signs he saw in this village were all too familiar. A bit of cloth trapped in the hardened creme beside the roadway. Burnt-out buildings, torched either out of a sadistic amusement or to deny beds and storm shutters to the army that had moved in next. Those fires had been fed by homes with too many possessions left behind. Engineers had continued to shore up the eastern storm wall, where a natural windbreak created a cleft. Normally, this shoring process would have taken weeks. Today, shardbearers cut out stone blocks, which windrunners made light enough to push into position with ease. The ever-present Azish functionaries were supervising. Dalinar turned toward the windrunner camp, troubled. Yasna's stunt had overshadowed their conversation about monarchs and monarchies, but now that he dwelled on it, he found it as disturbing as the duel. The way Yasna had talked, she had seemed proud of the idea that she might be Alethkar's last queen. She intended to see Alethkar left with some version of a neutered monarchy, like Thelena or Aesir. How would the country function without a proper monarch? The Alethi weren't like these persnickety Azish. The Alethi liked real leaders, soldiers who were accustomed to making decisions. A country was like an army. Someone strong needed to be in charge, and barring that, someone decisive needed to be in charge. The thoughts persisted as he neared the Windrunner camp and smelled something delicious on the air. The Windrunners continued a tradition begun in the bridge cruise, a large communal stew available to anyone. Dalinar had originally tried to regulate the thing. However, while he usually found the Windrunners agreeable to proper military decorum, they had absolutely refused to follow proper quartermaster requisition and mess requirements for their evening stews. Eventually, Dalinar had done what any good commander did when faced by such persistent mass insubordination. He backed down. When good men disobeyed, it was time to look at your orders. Today, he found the Windrunners visited by an unusual number of Thalans. The stews tended to attract whichever soldiers felt most out of place, and Dalinar suspected the Thalans were feeling that way, being so far from the oceans. Company Lord Sigzil was taking a turn at storytelling. Renarin was there too, in his Bridge IV uniform, watching Sigzil with rapt attention. Regardless of war or storm, the boy tried to find his way to this fire every evening. Dalinar approached, and only then did he realize the stir he was causing. Soldiers nudged one another, and someone ran to get him a stool. Sigzil paused in his story, saluting smartly. "They think I've come to approve of the tradition," Dalinar realized. They seem to have been waiting for it, judging by how eagerly one of the Windrunner squires brought him a bowl. Dalinar accepted the food and took a bite, then nodded approvingly. That inspired applause. After that, there was nothing to do but settle down and keep eating, indicating that the rest of them could go on with their ritual. When he glanced over at his son, Renarin was smiling. A reserved grin. You rarely saw teeth with Renarin. However, the lad didn't have his box out, the one he often used to occupy his hands. He was relaxed here among these people.
"That was good of you, father," Renarin whispered, moving closer. "They've been waiting for you to stop by."
"It's good stew," Dalinar noted.
"Secret horn-eater recipe," Renarin said. "Apparently it has only two lines of instructions. Take everything you have and put him in pot. Don't let anyone airsick touch seasonings."
Renarin said it fondly, but he hadn't finished his bowl. He seemed distracted, though he always seemed distracted.
I assume you're here to talk about what I told you? The episode?
Dalinar nodded.
Renarin tapped his spoon against the side of his bowl, a rhythmic click.
He stared at the cookfire flamespren.
Does it strike you as cruel of fate, Father? My blood sickness gets healed, so I can finally be a soldier like I always wanted. But that same healing has given me another kind of fit, more dangerous than the other by far.
What did you see this time?
I'm not sure I should say. I know I told you to come talk to me, but I vacillate. The things I see, they're of him, right? I think he shows me what he wants. That's why I saw you becoming his champion.
He glanced down at his bowl.
Gliss isn't convinced the visions are bad. He says we're something new, and he doesn't think the visions are specifically from Odium, though perhaps his desires taint what we see.
Any information, even if you suspect your enemy is feeding it to you, is useful, son. More wars are lost to lack of information than are lost to lack of courage.
Renarin set his bowl beside his seat. It was easy to fall into the habit of underestimating Renarin. He always moved in this deliberate, careful way. It made him seem fragile.
Don't forget, part of Dalinar thought, when you were broken on the floor, consumed by your past, this boy held you. Don't forget who was strong when you, the Blackthorn, were weak.
The youth stood up, then gestured for Dalinar to follow. They left the circle of firelight, waving farewell to the others. Lopin called out, asking Renarin to
look into the future and find out if I beat Huyo at cards tomorrow.
It seemed a little crass to Dalinar, bringing up his son's strange disorder, but Renarin took it with a chuckle. The sky had grown dim, though the sun wasn't fully set yet. These western lands were warmer than Dalinar liked, particularly at night. They didn't cool off, as was proper. The Windrunner camp was near the edge of the village, so they strolled out into the wilderness near some snarls of bushes and a few tall trees, with broad canopies that had grown out of the center, perhaps somehow using the bushes for extra strength. This area was relatively quiet, and soon the two of them were alone.
Renarin? Dalinar asked. Are you going to tell me what you saw?
His son slowed. His eyes caught the light of the now distant campfire.
Yes, he said. But I want to get it right, Father. So I need to summon it again.
You can summon it? Dalinar said. I thought it came upon you unexpectedly.
It did, Renarin said, and it will again. But right now, it simply is.
He turned forward and stepped into the darkness. As Renarin stepped forward, the ground beneath his feet became dark glass, spreading from the heel of his boot. It cracked in a web of lines, a purposeful pattern, black on black. Gliss, who preferred to hide within Renarin, grew excited. He'd captured this vision as it came, so they could study it. Renarin wasn't quite so enthusiastic. It would be so much easier if he were like other Radiants. Stained glass spread out around him, engulfing the landscape, a phantom light shimmering and glowing from behind in the darkness. As he walked, each of his footsteps made the ground pulse red, light shining up through the cracks. His father wouldn't be able to see what he did, but hopefully Renarin could describe it properly.
I see you in this vision, Renarin said to his father. You're in a lot of them. In this one you stand tall, formed as if from stained glass, and you wear shard plate, stark white shard plate, though you are pierced with a black arrow.
Do you know what it means?
Dalinar said, a shadow barely visible from behind the glass window depicting him.
I think it might be a symbol of you, who you were, who you become. The more important part is the enemy. He makes up the bulk of this image. A window of yellow-white light breaking into smaller and smaller pieces, into infinity. He is like the sun, Father. He controls and dominates everything, and although your figure raises a sword high, it's facing the wrong direction. You're fighting and you're fighting, but not him. I think I understand the meaning. You want a deal. You want a contest of champions, but you're going to keep fighting and fighting and fighting distractions. Because why would the enemy agree to a contest that he can theoretically lose? He already agreed, Delanar said. Were terms set? Renarin asked. A date picked? I don't know if this vision is what he wants us to see. But either way, I don't think he's worried enough to agree to terms. He can wait, keep you fighting, keep us fighting, forever. He can make this war so it never ends. Delanar stepped forward, passing through the stained glass that represented him, though he wouldn't know he had done so. It seemed to Renarin as if his father never aged. Even in his earliest memories, Renarin remembered him looking like this, so powerful, so unchanging, so strong. Some of that was from the things his mother had told Renarin, building an image in his head of the perfect Alethi officer. It was a tragedy that she hadn't lived to see Dalinar become the